Hi, this is Vikas Dubey, BA Part 2 Faculty of Social Science. Macbeth as a melodrama. William Shakespeare's Macbeth is a melodramatic revenge tragedy because it abounds in all the stock practices of a melodrama, as we shall presently see: ghosts, witches, apparitions, murders, bloodshed, sensationalism, blood-curdling, scene of cruelty, unnatural sufferings, horror and death. Dread. The tragic action is set in an uncanny atmosphere of guilt, crime, blood, and darkness. There is darkness within and darkness without. Moral darkness within the souls of the hero and the heroine, and the darkness of the night in the atmosphere. The genius of Shakespeare has raised the tragedy of melodramatic effects to the level of real tragic heights by placing before us the racking moral and spiritual agonies of the hero and the heroine. During the Elizabethan age, Senecan tragedy was considered to be the most artistic form of drama, but the genius of William Shakespeare changed all that. Seneca's tragedies failed to give the tragic impression because of their undue emphasis on sheer horror and external melodramatic action. Seneca's tragedies are often false, sadistic, tawdry, with rhetoric, hyperbole, and epigram. In the hands of Seneca, oratorical and the horrible become the aim of the serious drama. Seneca's aim was to produce a poem in dialogue form in which he could describe with an amazing flood of words and brilliance of diction scenes and deeds which he thought were tragic but which at most give one a creepy thrill. Revenge is not a lofty motive, but it is the chief motive of a typical Senecan play. Dramatic unities are not observed, and chance plays a very important part in Seneca's play. Macbeth was the last of the four great tragedies of Shakespeare. It is the most matured and the most refined work of art. In many aspects, Macbeth recalls Hamlet. The fascination for the supernatural, the motive of revenge, the blood shed, and the combats are the common features of both the plays. Just like the revenge tragedies of Seneca's, Macbeth starts with a crime followed by a long and complicated machinery of revenge, resulting in the final punishment and overthrow of the agents of original crimes. The play is steeped in melodramatic elements, but Shakespeare has exalted this tragedy to melodramatic effects, to real tragic heights. In a melodramatic revenge tragedy, the action is always set afoot by the murder of a father, a son, a brother, or a sovereign. A similar Macbeth also starts with the background and plan of regicide and later its execution. The story of Macbeth in bare outline is a tale of cruel villainy. The story is crimson with blood. The murder of the King Duncan is followed by the murder of Banquo, his son barely escaping. Then occurs the heinous massacre of Macduff's wife, son, all the relatives and servants, etc. Next, the rightful heir to the throne of Scotland, with the help of the King of England, returns to snatch back his throne from the usurper after a bloody war. Temptation begets sin, and sin begets retribution. The thief culprit, the sinner Macbeth, is constantly stalked by nemesis. He beheads his relation, benefactor, and King Duncan, and is ultimately beheaded himself by Macduff. He gets Banquo murderer, but his ghost returns to appall his murderers. Macbeth, in his anxiety for his security and to consolidate his position as the monarch, goes on pilling murderers upon murderers, but after every murderer he gets more anxiety, mental agony, spiritual anguish and turmoil. His wife goads him to adopt a career of crime. Later she finds herself suffering from somnambulism, which ultimately claims her life by suicide. Banquo, who murdered the guilty ambition of becoming the father of a long line of monarchs is duly punished for his sin and his murder. Thus, the tragedy Macbeth is typical revenge tragedy, full of crime and bloodshed, followed by retribution. The agencies of Nemesis in the play are basically melodramatic. The witches, ghosts, and apparitions charge the atmosphere in the play in the pay with horror. Besides supernatural agencies, other melodramatic devices have also been employed to charge the atmosphere with horror. The castle of Macbeth, the massive masonry, is surrounded by wind-swept, storm-wrecked heights and vast expanses of wild moorland, all under the cover of the gloom of twilight or the thick blackness of night. Almost all the scenes are night scenes. According to Bradley, darkness, or we may say blackness, broods over his tragedy. This blackness is sometimes relieved by the light, which is even more horrifying. According to Bradley, again, it cannot be an accident that the image of blood is forced upon us continuously, not only by the events themselves, but by full description and even by reiteration of the word unlikely parts of the dialogue. In action as well as in language, the drama is full of tumult and storm. The images signify violence throughout, in keeping with the violence within the hearts of central protagonists. Bradley tells that Macbeth is borne to the throne on a real wind, and the fate he goes to meet crimes on the wings of storm. A nameless terror pervades the whole atmosphere, and the impact is like a nightmare. The sounds and images combine to give the play an atmosphere of terror and fear. In a melodrama, dramatic unities are not followed. In Macbeth also, the unities are not followed. A melodramatic revenge tragedy should exhibit a predominance of music and songs. In Macbeth, we come across hautboys, cynets, trumpets, and there is also some dance and songs. Like melodramatic revenge tragedies, Shakespeare introduces chance or accident to be an important factor in human life. Malcolm, by chance, orders his soldiers to bear a bow from Birnam Wood trees in front of them to confound the enemy spies about their numerical strength. Similarly, the discovery of Macduff, not born of women, is also accidental. Poetic justice, distribution of weal and woe, is not fully addressed to in Macbeth. Also, we see this happening. Thus, Macbeth is superior to the melodramatic revenge tragedies because Shakespeare is more finished and better dramatic artist than any of the predecessors or contemporaries. Thank you. Now, next topic is villain as hero in Macbeth. William Shakespeare's plays Macbeth is his study in pure villainy. The hero of Macbeth is himself a villain. His personality towers over every other character's personality. Nothing takes place in the play which does not have a direct consequences of Macbeth's actions, emotions, or words. He is the central motive force of the play. All the scenes and details of the play get steered by Macbeth. The villain is shown to be what he is actually, and he chalks out his own destiny, the commission of sinful crimes which he is morally helpless and powerless to resist. Initially, Macbeth is shown as a man of exceptional and rare virtues and valor, an able general called Valor's minion and Bellona's bad groom. Respected and admired by one and all, he possesses lofty imagination. He is soon acting under the influence of external force, for instance, the witches and his wife, Lady Macbeth. She plots the murder and goads her husband Macbeth with fierce reproaches to murder King Duncan. Macbeth struggles but cannot fight. We sympathize with him. Shakespeare also shows fate working against him. The fate in Macbeth works as chance. Duncan declares his son Malcolm as the heir to his throne, and Macbeth considers Malcolm as an obstacle in the realization of his ambition to be the king himself. Then the king decides to visit Macbeth's castle as a token of his recognition and appreciation of his service and loyalty to the king. This gives Macbeth the opportunity to fulfill his ambition. Thus, the powers of evil are in league with fate. The strange anomaly is that is in the very presentation of Macbeth as passing from a loyal generalship of life of crime. Shakespeare has made us feel a sympathy for the hero. We do not pity him, but we feel an emotion of awe on witnessing his ruin. Shakespeare's dramatic genius succeeded in presenting a villain as a hero in Macbeth along with the requisite emotions of sympathy and awe in the mind of the audience on witnessing its performance. The hero is in Macbeth by no means a noble man like Hamlet or Othello is no doubt great like them. Outwardly, Macbeth appears to be bloodthirsty, revealing in murders and bloodshed. He butchers his noble guest in cold blood to usurp the throne and massacre innocent and helpless wife and children of Macduff, and treacherously gets Banquo murdered to secure his position on the throne. Shakespeare has now presented his hero in Macbeth that he at once enlists our sympathy and admiration despite his villainy and treachery. According to Bayer, two things are necessary to arouse the tragic emotions. When a villain is the hero of the play, the hero must be so great as to call forth our admiration as makes us conscious of the possibilities of human nature, and there must be an internal struggle represented. Shakespeare has done something more to enlist deeper sympathy and admiration for his hero. First, Shakespeare has introduced supernatural powers in order to raise his loathsome story of murder and bloodshed to a higher plane of real tragedy and to impart the deeds of Macbeth a kind of grandeur, awe, and sublimity. The weird sinisters guard him on to his path of evil despite his moral disgust and horror for it. Macbeth is helpless before the forces of evil and sin. We pity him when he laments, "Why do I yield to that suggestion whose horrid image doth unfix my hair and makes my seated heart knock at my ribs against the use of nature?" Shakespeare has also presented much internal struggle in Macbeth's heart to sees Macbeth to be a story of murder and bloodshed. It becomes a tragedy of soul. Heart of the hero, stung by a thousand scorpions, is laid bare by the dramatist, and we do not know whether to hate or pity Macbeth the hero. At one point he declares, "We shall proceed no further in this business." The fatal vision of the blood-stained dagger, the horrible mutterings of the sleeping grooms, the bleeding corpse of Duncan, and his own filthy hands cause a spiritual havoc in his heart and give him all the tortures of hell. It is Lady Macbeth who incites Macbeth to murder Duncan, and so her sin and guilt are said to be greater than Macbeth's. It is for this reason that she suffers great agony in her part. Her are the blesses of hell which causes of nurse's attendants to say, "I would not have such a hurt in my bosom for the dignity of the whole body." Shakespeare thus enlists our sympathy for Macbeth. Miller does not accept Macbeth as a villain like Iago. Thank you. Now, the next topic is the supernatural element in Macbeth. Shakespeare makes free and frequent use of the supernatural in his plays, Macbeth included, although this device does not appeal to us for the modern audience of the age of science and technology. But Shakespeare could not afford to ignore the audience of his time, which believed in the existence of the ghosts and witches. We also know that the dramatists of that period employed supernatural forces to cater to the taste of the erstwhile audience. Shakespeare employed this element partly to cater to the popular taste and partly to heighten and intensity the sense of mystery and tragedy by creating an atmosphere of horror, terror away, and mystery with the introduction of ghosts, apparitions, witches, etc. In Macbeth, Shakespeare handles the supernatural with the best of his skill and dexterity. According to Clark, Shakespeare reveals in Macbeth the darkest and most pessimistic phase of Shakespeare's life. His fear of the supernatural is not physical, it is moral. Thus, the supernatural powers in Macbeth, represented by the weird sisters, exercise great power and succeed in their fell purpose. Shakespeare has employed various forms of the supernatural in Macbeth. We come across ghosts, witches, apparitions, hallucinations, and many other forces which work covertly on the thoughts and actions of Macbeth, the hero, with the help, or we should say, with the refined employment of the supernatural. An otherwise sordid story of murder and revenge has been exalted to a level where it assumes a peculiar significance of its own. The supernatural powers greatly help in intensifying the tragic effect and also in universalizing the appeal of the tragedy. They render the tragedy tremendous and awe-inspiring and bring home the insignificance and helplessness of human being in the presence of these powerful evil forces and confront us with the deepest mystery and pathos of human life. The introduction of the supernatural element in Macbeth creates an atmosphere appropriate to tragic action, but it should also be remembered that the tragic action of the play Macbeth is not influenced by the presence of the sinister evil forces. The tragic action is the outcome of passions and emotions struggling in the hearts of its character. It is the natural, not the supernatural, which shapes and determines the course of action leading to the catastrophe of the hero and Lady Macbeth, the heroine. It is often believed that Macbeth is influenced by the witches in his treacherous and immoral act of murdering Duncan, his king and guest, and in the usurpation of the crown of Scotland. Even if it were true, how can we account for many other crimes and misdeeds in which the witches had no role to play? If we imagine that the murder of King Duncan was influenced by the prediction of the witches, what about the heinous cold-blooded massacre of Macduff's wife and innocent little children? These were neither dictated or nor even hinted at by the weird sisters. It was the handiwork of Macbeth himself. This point is vital to the conception of tragedy and arises out of human and not superhuman action. If man was shown to be influenced by outside forces, it would not be tragedy, because the hero would not be a free agent, but one whose actions were guided and governed by forces beyond his control. We have seen how Shakespeare's tragic heroes come to suffering and death due to some flaw, tragic flaw, in their characters. In other words, in such actions, their will is their own will, and they have a choice of action, and they come a grief when they choose wrongly. Thus, the moral responsibility of their choice lies at their own door, and not at that of fate or fortune or any other agency. They are the architects of their own fate, and so the character in them is their fate. The introduction of the element of supernatural in Shakespeare is a concession to the popular taste and audience belief in the super situations. Like his contemporaries, Shakespeare also uses the supernatural forces, ghosts, witches, apparitions, hallucinations, etc. But like his contemporaries, Shakespeare does not do so simply to cater to the popular taste and craving of his audience. Shakespeare uses the evil forces for his own purpose in his own way, and here Shakespeare steals a march over his contemporaries, and here he asserts his originality and individuality in the distinctive and characteristic use of the supernatural. Shakespeare's ghosts and witches are represented as objective symbols of subjective state of mind. They are the external manifestation of the inward passions, ambitions, temptation, agitating the minds and hearts of his characters. They are the visible agents of the invisible impulses driving the characters and their deeds, for which they themselves are responsible. They are dramatizations of their own wishes, evil impulses, and instincts. This is their dramatic significance. Supernatural forces do not put any evil ideas in men, but only strengthen and encourage what is already there in the hearts and minds of the character. They tempt out only when someone lends him herself to be tempted. They do not affect or share the free will of a character. It is precisely this that happens in Macbeth. The witches hail both Macbeth and Banquo, but it is only Macbeth who takes the bait, not Banquo. Macbeth has a vaulting ambition, and as such he is predisposed to believe that what the witches tell. They seem to speak out his own thoughts, unspoken though. This is dramatically depicted by Shakespeare. There is a close affinity between Macbeth and the witches. The witches declares that to them fear is fall and fear is fail, and by a strange coincidence, the very first words uttered by Macbeth in the play are an echo of these very words, so fear and fall a day. Clearly, the witches give a verbal expression to the unspoken thoughts of Macbeth. They are the outward symbols of his inner thoughts. Thus, we may say that evil is not supernaturally induced in Macbeth. Evil is already in Macbeth, and therefore he is tempted by the witches. Banquo, on the other hand, is also promised great things, but he dismisses them as delusions at best and evil promptings at worst. Banquo successfully resists evil thoughts, showing that it is character and not outside agencies which influence the thoughts and actions of the play of the characters in Shakespearean dramas. That witches do not suggest the evil means for usurping the throne. They do not tell Macbeth to murder Duncan. They are morally neutral and non-committed. It is Macbeth's own suggestions. The witches are the tempters and the bringers of the nemesis. The witches are the embodiment of the idea of evil and the outward manifestation of the tragedy of Macbeth, who is a free agent in the choice of action he commits. Thus, Shakespeare is original in the employment of the supernatural character. Characters themselves are the architects of their destinies and not the supernatural forces. Thank you.